You want to start talking about the funding for on the national level, like concerns and where
sure,
we are with it?
Sure. So I assume you're talking about federal funding.
Yes.
Let me just back up a couple minutes and just give you a description of what the funding is and where it goes. So we get funding every year through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and that money is actually designed for stations. It results in what are community service grants that go to our stations, and the idea is that it gives them some of the basic funding for operating costs. It represents on a national level about 15% of our system economy. And for you guys, what percentage of your funding is federal?
Do you know 25-30%.
Yeah. The reason that work so hard to try to maintain the funding. So I think part of the misunderstanding always is that somehow that because we happen to be in Washington that the money just comes to PS. It doesn't. It actually goes out to the stations. Is that, you know, for a station like this, if that funding went away, that, you know, 25-30% of your funding, that would be an existential crisis, I would say. And so a year ago when in this administration, the first budget, the number that was attached to us was zero. But when it went to the House and the Senate, a lot of champions stood up, probably most notable Tom Cole, who also chairs the Appropriations Subcommittee that our funding goes through, and he sees firsthand in Oklahoma what impact that we've had. And we've come through this budget cycle with full funding. So, so it's been positive. We have a lot of support both sides of the aisle. We have a lot of support in the House and the Senate. And a lot of our stations, make sure, look, legislators have to make very tough decisions about, what gets funded, particularly in this economic world that we live in right now. And I think that, people understand the role that the public stations play at the community level. Look, this is great that there's so much media here at the local level. I visit communities where there's no local papers left. There's no other radio or television beyond the public stations. And I think that, our work is important everywhere. I think that our work has outsized importance in communities like this, where the station is really very focused on, all the great PBS programming that we're bringing, but also, partnering with you and partnering with community organizations and trying to tell local stories and making sure that not only those stories are shared across the community, they're archived, and increasingly we're looking at ways to try to tell stories that are created here with a larger world. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things in the technology as it now evolves. We have the opportunity for more and more content sharing, across regions and across the country. Mm-hmm. Some of the arts work that Les described a little while ago, I'm very interested in, and I think others would be outside of this community, as well as making sure that it's a community asset. Right.
A concern for our democracy with the attacks on the media, and you have improved the perception of trustworthiness. What have you done differently while everybody else is suffering?
Yeah. So look, I mean, I can quote Thomas Jefferson like everyone else. I mean, I think that, democracy is really reliant on an informed citizenry. I believe that. And I think that what has happened to a certain extent, a few things. One is what actually we're just talking about. I think that the contraction in local media has had a big impact on why people distrust media. I think you all have seen stories where someone clearly is parachuted in from somewhere else, covers a story and may have some of the facts, but doesn't really understand the depth of the stories that they're trying to report. So I think that loss of local media, I think also if someone from outside of a community is telling that community's story, they have no stake. Mm-hmm. If you live in the community, you know that, you have an even deeper obligation to serve that community. I think that matters. So I think that's contributed to part of the distrust of the media. I also think that we haven't been helped by the 24-hour news cycle, that where there's a real blurring between entertainment and news. And I think that in a lot of places there's a complete blurring between point of view and news. I don't think there's anything wrong with doing point of view. But I think you need to understand what lane you're in and not mix it with news coverage. And I think there's too much of that now, and I see it. People watch us from all different political backgrounds, conservative and liberal, I think they, you know, as I've said, I think I said earlier today, I certainly say it a lot, we believe that the important thing is to present the news. People can decide what to think. I don't want to tell people what to think. And I think that, you know, if we do that and do that well, then we have, you know, then we've served our mission. And I believe that's why the trust in us is high. And I also can tell you that our audiences for both NewsHour and Frontline and even Washington Week with its newest host have grown because people really are looking for a fact. They're looking for information. And they trust us. They know that we've been around for a long time. And they know that, you know, our goal is to try to tell the stories as authentically as we can.
Do you feel we're under attack from some politicians who charge fake news and deride the media?
I think we're just in a very, I think we're in a very divisive time. And I think it's too easy for people to throw out, if they're not happy with something, then just to, you know, throw out lines like fake news. And I think that for us, all of the people that work with me, and I'm assuming it's the same for you all here, are just very focused on doing our jobs. And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, as I'm seeing now with our own audience growth, you know, we'll prevail. I think we shouldn't get caught up in the debates of anything. I just think we need to do our jobs and do them as well as we can.
Paul, first of all, thanks for being here. And since you've been president of PBS, what are you most proud of since you've started? Was it 12 years?
12 years.
12 years?
Still standing. I'm proud of a lot of things. I'm definitely proud of, actually most recently we launched a 24-hour children's channel. It's both broadcast and streamed. I'm really proud of that. I'm proud of it because no one is launching a broadcast channel now, but we're doing it because there's a significant audience, particularly of kids at risk that we're reaching. But we're also, we've linked it with stream technology so that kids who watch content on smartphones or tablets can use it. And I think that that's tied in with staying true to the mission, the fact that we are very mindful of the changing technology of how people are consuming content, and we've tried to stay pace with that. Yep. I'm very proud of it. It would be easy for our stations to circle the wagons and say, look, you know, we're broadcasters, that's what we do, people have to come to us. And I think that the way that our system has really recognized that this is opportunity. You heard Les talk about learning media. This is content that's delivered into classrooms or into schools via broadband. And, you know, we have, you know, more than 100,000 objects, either digitized objects or video segments and so forth, that are all based on core curriculum, all in a format that teachers can use. And that is all because we've been embracing of technology. And then, you know, look at the programs we've done over the last 12 years, you know, from Ken Burns' Vietnam series to Downton Abbey to, you know, the range of children's programming that we've brought forward. It's just been a great, you know, it's been a great content-rich period, and I'm really proud of all of it.
Yep. How about you, Kyle? You got any question?
Yeah. So what was your impression of visiting the new facility here? And then if you wanted to tie that into just specifically broadcasting for rural communities and how you see everything kind of tying
together. This is a great facility. I mean, I have to say, you know, Lester told me the story of how this building had come together and so forth. And, you know, I had a sense of what it was going to be, and I was just completely blown away. One, it's a beautiful facility. I just think the way that the, you know, it's sort of, I want to congratulate the architect. I just think organically it fits the landscape, and I love to come back when things are green. And but also I think, you know, as the plannings and everything take hold, I mean, I just think it's a physically beautiful space, but I think it's also well designed. One of the things that, you know, many stations have begun thinking about is really the station not just as a place that pushes out a signal, but also a place to bring the community in. And I've now been at two events here, and you can see how it really you know, the way that it's designed really brings people together. Now, a lot of the equipment isn't here yet, so I think you're looking at what now is the bones of a building and a facility that is going to grow into something that I think will be a quite significant resource for the community. And, you know, a lot of younger people are very interested in film. When I went to school, everyone wanted to write the great American novel. Some still do, but a lot of people are interested in filmmaking. And I think that, you know, creating a resource like this in this community that, you know, with editing facilities and everything where people can come in and share their own stories, I think that could be powerful. So there's a lot you could see that could happen out of this space. So I love this space, actually. I've seen a lot of stations, and this is actually one of my favorite.
No. How many stations
have I seen?
Have you seen?
You know, I've...
How many are there in the PBS?
There's 179 licensees. There's 350 separate stations.
Oh, wow.
I have not added up... At one point, I visited more than 3/4 of them.
Oh, wow.
But, I, you know, as someday I've got to actually now add up and see exactly how many I visited. But.
So there's 350 public broadcasting stations in the country?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a lot of us.
Yep.
Yeah.
How about you, Scott?
Are you guys doing much to invite public content creation and try and incorporate that into...
Yes. So we are on several different levels. A lot of we started doing a lot of early work in YouTube because there are a lot of new content creators that are working in that space, and there are a lot of new, media organizations that look at YouTube as almost a marketing tool, and they'll take, you know, derivative content from broadcast and they'll sort of dump it there. But there are a lot of people that I think, you know, 10 or 15 years ago would have been producing work for public television. They are now working on YouTube. The cost of production has gone down so that it really provides a great opportunity to create content. So we've been working with a number of producers there, some of them content that's produced at the local level and others that, you know, we've helped to manage from PBS. We also, because we've been so deeply involved also in digital, we're interested in people that are creating content that wouldn't fit in broadcast because the lengths are all off, you know. So there's a lot of really talented people that, you know, that create shorter form, you know, documentary that, you know, our programs have to time out to certain lengths, 26. Mm-hmm. 26 minutes for, you know, a half an hour program is great, but not all stories, you know, sort of fit into that arc. And so we've done a lot of work with independent film. We have a very robust involvement with independent film, and anyway, you know, we have two ongoing series, Independent Lens and POV, but, you know, we work with a lot of independent filmmakers. But going back to YouTube and digital, one of the things that those platforms offer up is the opportunity for people to comment and to publish in their own thoughts alongside of the work that we're doing. And so we've really been interested in those spaces as ways that people can also share their own creativity attached to the projects. And so we've been looking to do more and more of that.
Mm-hmm. The success as being an administrator, a female in a male-dominated industry, how did you run into a lot of challenges? Are things changing? Do you think things are improving?
Yeah, I mean, look, this has been a fantastically interesting year, you know. That's an understatement. And interesting is my favorite word, because anything fits under interesting. I think that, you know, look, I mean, there are a lot of times that I am aware that I don't feel that I just represent myself, but that I represent, you know, half of the population. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, but more and more, we see more women in significant roles. In my organization, we have more women than men, not by a lot, but still the balance tipped, and also in senior positions. And I think that, you know, as, you know, when I first got into, when I first started working, you know, there, the balance of women in the workplace was different. I think there's a whole generation that have grown up that are accustomed to seeing, you know, their mothers and their aunts and others working, and I think that, you know, it just continues to evolve. I think the issues of this past year, though, I think have surfaced the fact that as much as things have progressed, there are still issues that exist out there. And I think that, you know, as these stories continue to play out, I think it just makes everyone more conscious of, you know, how do you create work environments when everyone can bring their best game. And I think sometimes issues have come up and people aren't even conscious of what really is appropriate and not. And
it's cultural, so, almost, really.
It's a cultural move, for sure.
Paula, real quick, what's in the pipeline at PBS? So what's the future look like?
Yeah, so we have a lot of great stuff in the pipeline. So I talked about a few of these things last night. We've got, last summer, we did something called Wild Alaska Live, which we went to Juneau and we watched the salmon run.
Oh, wow.
And and we brought our kids' hosts, the Kraft Brothers, to host it. So the whole idea is that we wanted to make sure that we were reaching kids and families as well as adults that are interested in. And, you know, it's a risk when you do live. Everyone worried, right, are the bears actually going to show? They were hungry, so it worked out okay. But so this summer, we're not doing a big live event during the summer. We're actually going to do one this fall, which I'm not going to tell you about yet. Right. You'll have to wait.
Okay.
But we're doing a whole series of programs that sort of take you around the world, and ending with a series called No Passports Required. The host is Marcus Samuelson, and he's... we're hoping it'll be an ongoing series. We're partnering with Vox, and it's and we're looking at 6 cities, and we're looking at ethnic communities through food. And I think it will be, and we're beginning to work with stations on things to do around it. We are launching, we just announced last week, something called the Great American Read, mm-hmm, which will be American Idol style, voting on America's most loved book.
Oh.
And so we'll kick it off in May, and then we'll come back in the fall with a series of episodes where people will talk about what books really moved them, with the idea of moving towards voting towards America's most loved.
Oh, nice.
And it's, and the list of 100, you can go online now and look at it, it is everything from, you know, Great Gatsby and To Kill a Mockingbird and Don Quixote, not just American books, by the way, in the case of Don Quixote, but, you know, Harry Potter, mm-hmm, 50 Shades of Grey is on the list. I'm hoping that doesn't get but anyway, it's so it'll be really, I think it'll be great, and we're working with libraries and bookstores and everything, and we had the kickoff last week at the Morgan Library in New York, and it was, my colleague went, I was visiting our station in Anchorage, and he said, it was like March Madness. He said it was the craziest thing I've ever seen. People were screaming as they were announcing which books were on the list. You know, so anyway, I think it'll be pretty great. And then Ken Burns' next big series is on country music, and that will broadcast next year.
Awesome.
And that I can't even tell you how big it will be because he hasn't delivered the final series, mm-hmm, yet, but it will be big.
Good.
And it'll have a lot of pieces attached to it. I know stations are going to do stuff around it as,
right,
it comes,
yep,
out.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay, I got a mover on. Thank you. For taking this time with these local journalists that are really keeping our region informed. And, you know, I've really derived a lot of inspiration from you as our leader. And
yep,
I'm just so glad that you guys could meet it out, too.
Yep. Yep.
It's been fun.
Yep.
It's been fun.
Yep.
Yeah, now I'm going to tape some spots for him.
Yeah, there you go.
They're working me hard. So they let me go home.
Free.
I know. It's like, oh, my,
yep,
God, what else do you need me to do?
Thank you, Paul.
It's great to see you. It's great meeting your brother last night.
Yeah,
too.
On behalf of the board of directors, thank you so much for
coming
out here.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Really nice to meet you.